about to hear my conversation with Leslie Marks. We talk all about geopolitical risks, the conflict in the Middle East, what impacts that might have on the commodity space, as well as her outlook for the Canadian and U.S. market. I hope you enjoy. This podcast is for informational purposes only. Information relating to investment approaches or individual investments should not be construed as advice or endorsement. Listeners should seek professional advice for their situation. Welcome to Market Exchange, a podcast from Mackenzie Investments. I'm your host, Matthew Schnurr, and I'm delighted to be here with Leslie Marks. Leslie's our CIO of equities. Leslie, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Matt. Great to be here once again.
Well, it's great to have you, particularly a timely podcast. I'd like to start off by talking about the events over the weekend. There was a largely anticipated and signaled Iranian drone attack of Israel. And we're in sort of a state right now, recording on the 15th, where we don't know if the Israeli reaction, but it does seem like there is some more geopolitical risk, certainly, that markets are digesting. What do you think is priced in?
Well, I think it's fair to say that we have seen a significant escalation in the conflict in the Middle East. So I think you're asking the right questions to say, okay, so now what? You know, I look at a few things that would be normally what we would consider bellwethers, and probably the most obvious would be oil prices.
Sure.
And I thought it was really interesting last week watching market trading. Obviously, oil has been a very strong year to date, up over 20%. But in the last week, when we saw Iran telegraphing this potential drone strike on Israel, we didn't really see oil moving. So it seemed to me that the market was fairly confident that Israel would be able to defuse this attack and it wouldn't have a great impact. And it was more of a signal in nature. So I thought that was interesting. But if I look at some of the other things that we would look at, so for example, measures of volatility like the VIX or the CBOE volatility index, it's actually spiked up a little bit. If you look just on a short-term basis, it's around 17 to 18 level. It had been trading at a very low 12 to 13 range. So that seems like a material increase, but I was actually looking over the last 10 years and coincidentally, 17, 18 is about the longer term average over that period of time. So we kind of got into this almost too little or sort of ignoring risks to some extent, because there's always risks happening, you know, whether it's geopolitical or otherwise. So I think that we've seen a little bit of a move higher in volatility, but certainly not in a fearful range. Another thing that I was looking at was the U.S. dollar. Well, the U.S. dollar has certainly traded higher in recent weeks. And so that's a very typical flight to safety trade. So it's certainly pricing in a little bit more risk in the market. Another area, which is really interesting, actually, is U.S. treasuries, because this is another part of the market that we would think of as a flight to safety trade. And we've all been digesting the recent U.S. economic data, particularly inflation data. And the market is really focused on what and when the Federal Reserve is going to move with interest rates and starting to price out a movement lower in rates, certainly in the next couple of months. So we haven't, so what we've seen, our yields have backed up and bonds have sold off. So we haven't seen money flow into treasuries, sort of out of equities, riskier assets into safer asset classes. So I'd say overall, that was a long way to answer your question, to say in general, markets are showing a little bit of a reflection of increased risk, but certainly not any significant degree of fear. Even when you look at price performance, you know, equities have had a very strong run year to date to the end of March, and over the last 10 days or so, all we've really seen is kind of a 2-3% pullback, which one could say is extremely normal in any market environment after a strong move in equities. And so I would say that very little fear or increased risk is priced into to the market. So people generally think that even though this is an increased escalation in the conflict in the Middle East, that it will continue to be contained.
That's a very thorough response. Just to, I guess, highlight, would you expect that if the escalation does continue, that commodities would be the place where you'd see it most?
So commodities have been really interesting. And I think you have to, you know, we can look at commodities in aggregate because they've been moving up, you know, very strongly, whether it's energy, base metals, or gold. So let's unpack all of that. Let's start with base metals, because we did have some interesting news in the base metals space over the weekend, which has been driving pricing. Aluminum and nickel are surging and have surged over the weekend due to new US and UK sanctions. The US and UK sanctions have banned deliveries of Russian supplies. And so we saw almost 10% price moves over the weekend. Russia represents about 5% of global supply in the major base metals like nickel, aluminum, and copper. So this is significant. And so the market is responding to that tightness. Oil, as I mentioned, hasn't really been responding to the latest developments in the Middle East, but certainly there is some pricing in that 20% move overall for higher risk in the Middle East. And then the other factor that's really important is related to global growth. Global growth has generally surprised to the upside this year thus far. And one area where we've seen a little bit of green shoots has been in China. And that's also contributed to the strength in oil prices. So I think oil has been much more of an economic story. Gold also. Gold is a really interesting one. It confounds most people most of the time. Sometimes people look at gold as a risk on trade. Sometimes it's a risk off trade. Sometimes it's related to trading off of interest rates. Sometimes it's related to speculation. You know, an asset class that moves with Bitcoin or cryptocurrency, for example. So it's been a really difficult one to call, particularly in the face of, as I said, interest rates have been moving upward the last couple months, which typically would put downward pressure on gold. But gold has certainly, you know, had a very strong bid. What we don't know is if that's related to restocking of strategic reserves of gold or if there's something sort of external that we can't account for that's moving up the price of gold. You know, gold's an asset that countries buy and sell for sure. So we don't always see the flows, but there definitely seems to be higher demand for gold as we've seen in Canadian export data. So commodities have been a really interesting complex where you've seen, you know, all this focus on the Magnificent Seven and US equities. And I think most investors haven't really had their eye on the commodity complex, but there's been a lot of money to be made in that group this year so far.
That's great context. Maybe we'll shift to broader equity markets. Your discussions in general, when we think about commodities going up, one of the things that sort of that naturally leads to is inflation and resilience of inflation. We've seen a hot CPI print out of the US. We haven't had the same scenario in Canada where we've seen it weaken a little bit. But would you expect that this would feed through into CPI and inflation data? And if so, does that curtail the ability for central bankers to cut rates as expected?
It's certainly a concern. When it comes to energy, of course, most central bankers are typically looking at the core rate. So that's ex food and energy. But other commodities certainly go into cost of goods sold and will filter into goods inflation. Interestingly, you mentioned the data that we've seen recently about higher inflation and where inflation has actually been, you know, harder, I think, for people to digest has been the services side.
Right.
And the reason it's been harder to digest is because even when you take out the cost of rent, for example, services inflation is still quite high. And so we haven't really seen the impact of higher commodity prices yet come through in the inflation data. And so that could be the impact where we shift away from the focus on the sticky services inflation to now back to sticky costs of goods inflation. And so I do think that that is lingering. What we've seen recently when I talked about the treasury market has generally been a pretty significant retracement of interest rates. I would say in the sort of 70% range from what we saw from October of last year, where interest rates started to fall and people started to expect that central bankers were going to pivot. We've seen that significant retracement, certainly in as I said, U.S. treasuries, higher in interest rates. So we're really pricing out the prospect of rate cuts in the U.S. economy. Now, you made the distinction with the Canadian economy, sure, where not only has our economic data been weaker, whether it's unemployment data or inflation data, for example, we're in a little bit of a different situation where our central bank probably has a window here based on the data where they could move at their next meeting in June.
Sticking with Canada, and based on your previous comments, it sounds like it would actually be fairly supportive of the Canadian economy. Think of commodities up, base metals up. We certainly produce a lot of those. Is that the right way to read it, or how do you view the prospects for the Canadian economy or Canadian stock market as well?
Well, interestingly, you sort of need to separate out the Canadian stock market from the Canadian economy. Those are actually two different questions. And the reason for that is typically our market tends to move a lot more with global growth. And we have seen that the Canadian stock market has been an underperformer because we don't have those same technology high growth sectors that have been really rewarded and have certainly been dominating the market. But if you look at the returns of the TSX year to date, I actually disaggregated the returns based on current data. And just to remind our listeners, energy is almost 19% of the TSX and materials are about 12%. And materials includes both gold and base metal and forest products and chemicals. And so it's a little bit diversified within that group. But those two groups alone represent about 95% of the 4% move in Canadian stocks year to date. So if not for those two sectors, basically we would have almost flat returns for the TSX. So overall, I think that continued upside in the commodity space. I mean, in general, most people would say when you look at the supply and demand fundamentals of commodities because of just a general underinvestment in commodities while the population in the world is growing, that we've underinvested and therefore that should have a strong fundamental underpinning to pricing going forward for commodities. So that should be good for Canadian stocks overall. As I mentioned, the sort of upside surprise in the global economy, you know, almost in any economy outside of Canada, if you will, that should also be good in general for Canadian stocks. When it comes to the Canadian economy, I think what we really do need is a little bit of stimulus here. We've had, and this is, you know, lots of ink has been spilled on this, but we've had significant productivity challenges. We have housing affordability crisis here across this country, a healthcare availability shortage for many parts of our population. We have a lot of issues that we need to manage here that create some headwinds. And so I think a little bit of easing here on the monetary policy side would be very prudent at this point in time to help support Canadians.
Maybe I'll stick with that thread then and talk a little bit about Canadian fixed income. Am I right to assume that should we see the easing? I guess a lot of that's already priced in, but what would your expectations be for the fixed income market?
Yeah, I think that in general, people, you know, they don't have good visibility on what the path will be of the Bank of Canada and the pace. So let's just say hypothetically, we see one move 25 basis points in June. That's not going to do a lot to stimulate the economy, and that's probably well priced into the market. Sure. I think where we could see a paradigm shift in how fixed income performs here in Canada will be any upside surprises to central bank moves. So depending on how the economy does, you know, when you look at the unemployment numbers, over 6% now, we've moved up by 1%. Numbers like that could be, you know, really supportive of moving at a faster pace. And if we see some upside surprise in how fast the Bank of Canada moves after that initial move, which will probably be just like a little tiptoe into the easing policy arena, then that should generally be good. You know, it really, you have to sort of balance policy moves with how the economy responds as well.
Fair enough. Maybe just broadening out your views, and I'll ask you about the U.S. Stock market. What are your expectations for the U.S. given what we've talked about today?
So U.S. equities, you know, one thing we are seeing is a few signs that would be supportive of a continued pullback here. We're not viewing this as, you know, a big correction, not an expectation, but most years is very normal to see a 5 or even a 10% pullback in equities. As I mentioned, we're in that 2-3% right now. But if you look at things like the momentum factor, there's a momentum factor ETF you can look at. You can see it looks like that momentum has been a very strong factor. Market sensitivity, so beta, that looks like it's starting to roll over a little bit here. So the more momentum driven parts of the market are getting a little bit fatigued. Also, some of the stocks that have had, you know, the biggest contribution to returns in the U.S., you know, our Magnificent Seven has kind of moved to a Magnificent Four, for example. We've seen some of those stocks, you know, no change in fundamentals, but just on a technical basis are starting to roll over. Then we've also seen some fundamental changes, you know, Tesla, which was one of the stocks that was in the original Magnificent Seven, but sort of got kicked out or banished, if you will, when we moved to the Magnificent Four as their results were a little bit disappointing. Today announced a 10% cut in their workforce. So, you know, things like that sort of show you that, you know, all is not rosy across the board. And so I think that when we look at U.S. equities, we see that for sure the fundamentals, as in, you know, a strong economy, actually pretty decent earnings growth. It's very early in earnings season, Q1 earnings season, but what we've seen so far has been quite good. And so we think that actually earnings will be supportive of U.S. equities. But from time to time, we get a little bit of exhaustion in markets that do really well. And that can create a great buying opportunity for a market like the U.S., which has such strong fundamentals.
Well, Leslie, thanks so much for coming on the podcast, sharing your views on all things equities, fixed income, and geopolitics. Really appreciate you spending the time.
Well, thank you for having me once again, Matt.
The content of this podcast, including facts, views, opinions, and recommendations, is not to be used or construed as investment advice and is not an offer or an invitation to buy or sell any security. The content of this podcast should not be relied upon for any purposes, and Mackenzie Financial Corporation is not responsible for any reliance upon it. This podcast includes forward-looking information that reflects our current expectations or forecasts of future events. Forward-looking information is subject to risks, uncertainties, and assumptions that could cause actual results to differ materially from those expressed herein. Our views are subject to change based on market conditions. Commissions, trailing commissions, management fees, and expenses may be associated with mutual fund investments. Please read the fund facts and prospectus before investing. The indicated rates of returns are historical annual compounded total returns, including changes to unit values and reinvestment of all dividends or distributions, and does not take into account sales, redemptions, distribution, or optional charges or income taxes payable by any security holder that would have reduced returns.